I do appreciate being asked to come here, and some of you will know that the Westside Church was part of a PMC process led by Mark Love from Rochester, along with Newmarket, Stony Creek, and Tintern. And so, well, we're not going to go over that necessarily, but if you do want to follow along, I'm just going to look at a couple of texts. First one is Matthew chapter 9. And when Art first called me, he said, we want you to speak on being a good neighbor and the Christian as citizen. And so it's not going to be the same class both days. Today is going to be the church being a good neighbor, and tomorrow will be the Christian as citizen. And what I wanted to begin with is just showing a little bit of a thing. Well, this here, something, being a good neighbor, I think we'll all be able to lighten the mood a little bit. This is our theme song that we play every Sunday at Westside before we begin. You'll notice Mr. Rogers, of course. I've always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. That's what he says. And so the question that we've been asking at the church for the last number of years is, do we want to be their neighbors? The neighbors that move into our neighborhood, did we want neighbors just like them? Do we want to welcome them in? And I wanted to start off just by showing a family that have come to regard us as their family. And it's one of these things, and this family here, I believe God has arranged, I believe God's involved, and I'll talk more about them in a little bit. This is Muhammad al-Shamari, who is a Shia Muslim originally from Iraq, who was on the Iraq national soccer team, and one day was driving in Baghdad and was kidnapped. And for 10 days, he didn't know where he was, and it took a while for him to tell me this story, by the way, before he could trust me enough to tell me the story, but he had a bag over his head, and for 10 days, he would be asked, are you Shia or Sunni? And he didn't know how to answer, because he didn't know which one would kill him if he answered the wrong way. His family had to sell or all their life savings to acquire his release. He was released in northern Iraq, and he had an aunt that lived in northern Iraq, and so he went there, and at the time they had their oldest son was, and the wife and son went and met them in northern Iraq. And this was 2004, and so they went into Syria and found safety in Syria, which we know today isn't very safe, but for 10 years it was a safe spot. Well, they won the lottery, which is how they do their immigration process there. And so they were able, in 2014, October, able to come over to Canada and were settled in Windsor. Our church runs a clothing drive through the local schools. And we go to the principals and we give them about 50 invites or whatever. And we say, any family who needs, please send them. And the principals at first were wondering if this was a Christian-only invite. And if so, they couldn't have anything to do with it. We said, no, we're not going to just clothe Christian people. We're going to clothe anyone who has need. So they showed up, the parents, Muhammad and Kadesia, and didn't speak English. Thought they had to prove their immigration process with me, brought all their legal papers, and so they came, and we clothed them, and I noticed that they were going to have to call a cab, so I said, would you mind if I gave you a ride home? So I gave them a ride home, and they said, if you ever are involved with Middle Eastern people, their idea of hospitality is far greater than ours. And as soon as we got there, he said, come. So I went into their home, and they made me Turkish coffee, which, by the way, I just love this little bit of Turkish coffee. And I go into their home, and they have one chair. It's an old kitchen chair, and that's it. There's a family of five. They have nothing else. So they've been there for a month. This was November 7th. They came in the first part of October. I tried to ask, what are they sleeping on? The floor. They only have one chair. That's all they have. And so my wife got on Facebook, and through friends on Facebook, we were able to, not us, but the whole people, were able to furnish the whole apartment for them. Every child had a bed. The parents had a bed and all things like that. And so he started to call me his brother. And we would bring people who could speak Arabic with us so we could talk with them in conversation. You can imagine the first few times, they don't speak English, we don't speak Arabic, and yet we were laughing together, right? We were able to eat and so on together. And they were our guests last year for our Christmas supper. And it was quite exciting to have them over for Christmas supper. He revealed to me just shortly before this that the scars from when he was tortured, when he was kidnapped. He finally, you notice he wears long sleeves, and he finally lifted them up and showed me all the burn marks that had happened to him when he was kidnapped and everything like that. And so he calls me his brother. And his children, he encourages them to call me uncle. And so who would have thought that an Iraqi national soccer player would be calling me his brother in 2015. And so I'm going to talk a little bit more about them in a little bit. But they had a baby. She was pregnant when she came over. And her Canadian name is Sarah, which is my wife's name. So they named her after my wife. And so they were thrilled to have us as part of their family. And it's an interesting thing. I wrote a little while ago, I can't call him friend, but can I call him my brother? In some way, is he still my brother in the human family? Can I treat him as a true neighbor? By the way, he only came at me with a bomb three times, and then I dismantled. You know, one thing I would caution, don't pass on any Facebook posts that talk about all Muslims wanting to kill, because you have to know them before you make a decision like that. So anyways, let's begin, and we're going to talk about this. Matthew chapter 9, Jesus, in verse 35, Jesus goes throughout all the cities and villages, and he's teaching in their synagogues, he's proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease and every affliction. And then it says in verse 36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. That when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. And when we look at this text, I like to think that there we see the obvious heart of Jesus, that Jesus noticed people. That he saw the crowds. And he took time to notice them. And we notice that Jesus is moved with compassion. And I think we learn something from Jesus, that he does not discern the reasons behind why the people are in the shape they are, as if to somehow find the blame to be with them. That somehow the reason they are in the shape that they're in is because of them. That Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't say that they're in the shape they're in because of them. And I think it's important, and it's hard for us, to look at the scenes of those refugees. Right? And it's a big problem. We don't know what all of us little ones can do about that. But Jesus teaches us the first move should be to be moved with compassion. That should be the first move if we're following the steps of Jesus. He notices that they're harassed and helpless. Another version says they were weary and worn out. He was moved with compassion because they were weary and worn out. And the text I thought we'd focus on mostly today is, of course, the Good Samaritan text of Luke chapter 10. But I wanted to keep that in mind, that Jesus was moved with compassion because they were harassed and helpless, weary and worn out. In Luke chapter 10, we pick up the story in verse 29. The lawyer has come to Jesus, you know, wondering what he can do to inherit eternal life. Jesus turns it back on him. The lawyer responds correctly. Love the Lord your God with everything you have. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, do this. Yes, do this and you'll live. And we pick it up in verse 29. He said, the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Who must I show love to? Who must I be involved with? Who is the person that I'm able to look at and not care for? That's essentially the question. Because if neighbor means everybody, then you don't ask this question. Because if neighbor means everybody, it means everybody. And when Jesus said, love everybody, that means you'd have to love everybody. But this man wants to know, who is it that could be hurting and I can walk on by and feel justified? Who is my neighbor? And who is my neighbor is a major question in Scripture. And it's a challenge for us today. Because we want to know. And we discover in the story and we discover in the teachings and actions of Jesus throughout the Gospels that despite some Samaritans wanting to hate us, there are some good Samaritans. And despite some centurions abusing their power, there are some faithful centurions. And despite some Canaanites being godless, there are some Canaanite women who have great faith. Jesus teaches us that. That there is a good Samaritan. Even if 99.99% of the rest of them are bad, there is a good one. There is a good Samaritan. There are conditions in our world that the Good Samaritan story brings to our notice here. There are bad people in the world who want to do bad. You'll notice that a man is traveling and robbers, violent men, come and they strip him and they beat him and they leave him for dead. And so there are bad people in this world. I'll give you a little story about the time I was most scared. And I get scared a lot. But me and this young guy, who was really on fire, he wanted to do a community dinner. And so we started to go into the West End. And we'll talk a little bit about the West End in a moment. And these two guys are outside their front door. And we just happened to notice at the end of the driveway that what the one guy's showing the other is a gun about this size. And I'm like, oh, man. And the young guy stops. And I'm thinking, and they're looking at me. I'm thinking, well, I'll just walk right on up to them, I guess. But luckily, I didn't get shot. I'm thinking, man, oh, man. There are bad people. And the truth is, that guy could have turned on me and maybe he wanted to shoot me and I'd be gone. Right? There are bad people. But then Jesus informs us there is also victims who are struggling. There is the man who has been beaten, who's helpless, who's weary and worn out, who's stripped and left for dead. There's someone who is on the road of life and is hurting. Is really hurting. And then there's the dedicated religious person who doesn't care for the person who's struggling, who walks on by. The priest and the Levite by chance, your version might say, or happened to walk on by. They were on the same road as the person who's struggling, but they had religious things to do. They couldn't be bothered with this man who was beaten and hurting. By chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. By chance. There was no plan here. It's just that by chance, he came across someone who was hurting, and he decided it's time to go by. So we were challenged. Who do we know that are harassed and helpless? Who do I know that's weary and worn out? Who do I know that's been beaten down or beaten up? And so at Westside, a number of years ago, and the PMC process helped us, we started to ask a question, why are we here? And I didn't mean it to be a deep philosophical quest, you know, like, why are we here? You know, what is the purpose of mankind here? But why are we here? And our church address is 2255 Totten Road, Windsor, Ontario, a few blocks from Ambassador Bridge over the river. We're located on the west end of Windsor, and so the question is, why are we here? Why are we at 2255 Totten Road on the west end of Windsor, just a few blocks from Ambassador Bridge? Why are we here? And the question that was put to us one time is, if the church were to close its doors and be shut down, what would the neighborhood notice? What would they notice if you weren't there anymore? Would they notice? Would it make a difference in their lives if this neighbor that was supposed to be made up of a group of people following Jesus weren't there anymore? What would they notice? And so we started to ask this question, and for the Westside Church of Christ, it meant a few things. It meant we're in Essex County, the city of Windsor, but more importantly, on the west end of Windsor. It might have been different when you were there, Ray. Why were you at the west side of Windsor when you were there? I think I have an answer, but anyways, that's where we were. And the question we had to ask is, are we here because it's convenient for us? Is that why we're here? But it also meant we're in a nice building, immediately surrounded by nice homes that are above the average cost in Windsor. So we live in the immediate area of the church is in a nice neighborhood. But a block in every direction, we discovered that we are in the midst of the lowest income section of Windsor. Why are we here? Right in the midst of Windsor's deepest poverty. Why are we right here? For Westside, it also meant we are in the midst of a very diverse neighborhood, despite our congregation being the opposite. Our congregation is very white. Everyone has a job. Everyone makes good money. Everyone speaks English. That's changing a little bit. But in our neighborhood, most people are not white. Most people do not have English as their first language. So we're in the midst of a very diverse neighborhood, and we weren't a diverse congregation. And so what does it mean that we're here? And we noted about Windsor that it has the highest unemployment rate in Canada. It has for quite some time. Ever since the auto industry went down, we've gone down. It's got the highest unemployment rate in Windsor. Over 16,000 children live in poverty in Windsor. One out of every six children live in poverty. That's poverty or below, right? That's the line. 38,000 residents of Windsor live in poverty in a city of 200,000. So that's a high number there. The cost of eating healthy has risen 19% in Essex County. There are more food deserts in the west end of Windsor than any other metropolitan area in Ontario. Food desert is you have to walk 1.6 kilometers or more for healthy food, and the west end of Windsor has seven areas where they can't do that. That's 1.7 kilometers on average. That's where we were. These are our neighbors. That we live in food deserts. We live in the middle of one or two of those food deserts, depending on how they draw the lines. That's where we are. A city with a population of slightly over 200,000, we now live with 10% who are Muslim, 20 to 25,000, and many of them live in our area because immigrants tend to go where the low income is, right? That's just what happens. 65,000 citizens of Windsor claim to have no faith, which is a high number, highest it's ever been, 65,000. So that's, why are we here? That's the question. Why are the people of Jesus right here? And what does it mean? And so then we asked, why are we here? What's going on? Is it convenient for us to come and have a place to assemble? Is that why we're here? Just to remind us of where we're going after life, and that's why we're here. Is that why we're here? That basically we're just like the priest and the Levite traveling on the road to do our religious service, but the surrounding area means nothing to us? That the people we pass by who are struggling to even feed their kids, that means nothing to us, that we just need to go and do our worship service and then go home to our nice homes and not care about the community around us? Are we not going to get involved with the messes? Keep ourselves clean. Keep ourselves safe. Rather than try to go out there. The Old and the New Testament remind us that we're not simply here for ourselves. Micah, right? Micah chapter 6. What shall I come before the Lord with? You know, should I come with all these sacrifices? No, he has shown you, O man, what is right. Right? To do justice, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God. That's why you're here. To do justice. And Jesus said, you're the light of the world. But a light's no good if you hide it. You know, a thousand Christians locked in a building. It's not doing anything. Except for each other, right? It's not displaying the light of God. Let your light shine. Do your good works so they may glorify your Father who's in heaven. So the question comes down to this, as far as we were concerned, with what kind of love are we supposed to love our neighbor? How am I supposed to love my neighbor? And one time, it was 1995, Art, that Phil Slate was here. I was just starting preaching full time. It's my first ever Bible seminar, so you know you're just excited to be there, you know. And Philip Slate said a statement: "Don't tell a blind man that the deaf can hear." And that's always impacted me, because the blind man wants to know if he can see. Doesn't matter to him if the deaf can hear. He wants to know if the blind can see. And I wonder if in a city where there's 16,000 children who cannot afford to eat, and I wonder in a city where there's so many immigrants who are fearful of what life is going to be like, that 39,000 of them live under the poverty line, and there's a church building worth about $400,000 or $500,000 just down the street from them, I wonder if they really care about our message that we're saying in the church building. With what kind of love are we supposed to love our neighbor? And so we ask the question, will we love our neighbors only in the hopes that they will give us something in return? Is that how we're going to love our neighbors? That basically, that their hunger I'm going to use to my advantage. That you're hungry, and I'll give you food, but you'll get more of it if you come to church, basically. That what I'm looking for here is not to help you in your problem. What I'm looking for is for you to come and sit in my church building. And I'm just going to take advantage of the fact that you're hungry. You know, anyone will listen to anything if they're hungry, right? Is that how I'm supposed to love them? That's the primary goal here. That really, it doesn't matter if your stomach gets fed. It matters if my building gets full. That's what matters. Is that what Jesus did? Is that the kind of love? Do I take their great need and use it to the church's advantage? Is that love? It's not love. That's not love. Is that loving my neighbor or loving myself? Is that the church loving them or the church loving itself? Do you feed your kid only hoping that your kid will stay at home? Or do you feed your kid because your kid needs to eat? Is that doing to others as I would have them do to me? Who is my neighbor? And so we got to ask this question seriously, we said. The Good Samaritan simply loves the man, takes care of his needs, and leaves. And Jesus says, who proved to be this man's neighbor? And the man said, the one who showed compassion. And you notice what Jesus said, go and do likewise. That's a command. To love as the Good Samaritan loved. And so, can I love my neighbor? Can I love the West End of Windsor? G.K. Chesterton wrote in his book Orthodoxy, and I'm going to change the town he used. And this is something that we used the first Sunday of the past few years in Windsor. It was Pimlico was the town that Chesterton wrote about, but this is, I'm going to substitute Pimlico with Windsor's West End. Let us suppose we are confronted with a desperate thing, say Windsor's West End. If we think what is really best for Windsor's West End, we shall find the thread of thought leads to the throne of the mystic and the arbitrary. It is not enough for a man to disapprove of Windsor's West End. In that case, he will merely cut his throat or move to Southwood Lakes. Nor certainly is it enough for a man to approve of Windsor's West End, for then it will remain Windsor's West End, which would be awful. The only way out of it seems to be for somebody to love Windsor's West End. To love it with a transcendental tie and without any earthly reason. If there arose a man who loved Windsor's West End, then Windsor's West End would rise into ivory towers and golden pinnacles. Windsor's West End would attire herself as a woman does when she is loved, for decoration is not given to hide horrible things, but to decorate things already adorable. A mother does not give her child a blue bow because he is so ugly without it. A lover does not give a girl a necklace to hide her neck. If men loved Windsor's West End as mothers love children, arbitrarily because it is theirs, Windsor's West End in a year or two might be fairer than Florence. Some will say that this is a mere fantasy. I answer that this is the actual history of mankind. This, as a fact, is how places did grow great. Go back to the darkest roots of civilization and you'll find them knotted around some sacred stone or encircling some sacred well. People first paid honor to a spot and afterwards gained glory for it. Men did not love Rome because she was great. She was great because they had loved her. Could men love Windsor's West End? And so what we started to do, can we love them? We started to do some things. This fell on our laps. This was a godsend. This was God leading us. How do we reach our neighbors with love? And I showed you the stats about food security is the lowest in Windsor's West End than any other metropolitan area in Ontario. It is a poor place. It just is. And I didn't put this stat on there. The majority of them have full-time jobs. It is not what you would normally hear from people on conservative radio or something like that, that they're lazy or they're not lazy. They have full-time jobs and they do not make enough to reach the poverty line. That's just what it is. Minimum wage does not supply a family of five. It just doesn't. Okay. So the majority of them work. They're hardworking. Another number of them are going to school and trying to better themselves. We learn a lot of things about our neighbors. We learned a lot of admirable things about our neighbors over the past number of years. But so this fell on our lap. Forgotten Harvest began in Detroit, and it's come over to Windsor. Major success story. It's a food rescue program. Grocery stores will not take certain kinds of vegetables because their shoppers don't like the looks of them, even though they're good. So that kind of even is a slap in our face, right? That those who are well-to-do are too spoiled of shoppers, that if if there's 5 tomatoes on a certain kind of vine instead of 6, we will not buy it. So there's good tomatoes. And so what Forgotten Harvest does is they go to all these grocery stores and all these farms in Essex County. And every day from Monday through Friday, they pick up tons of fresh vegetables that would be thrown out otherwise. We are one of the spots that supplies the West End. And so this fell in our laps. And this was a godsend. I mean, we didn't even do anything. There's no cost involved or anything. There's a story that we tried to set up tables in our church parking lot, and I'm all excited about it the first night, and nobody came. And so I'm like, oh man, this is, no. Now I've got like 3,000 cucumbers here, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And even then, I don't know how I'm going to reach the neighbors. My wife's a little smarter than me. She goes, you know what, it's okay. When I told her about it, like, you know, I'm crying, you know, I'm all upset. She goes, it's okay. We're going to go down to the neighborhoods. And we'll just go door to door. And we did that. And at first, like, people are like, you know, fresh vegetables, like, and church. You know, what's the catch? And all of a sudden, we started to find some neighbors who started to take. And so this is something we do. And right now we go to 120 homes every week with enough vegetables for their week. And there's a couple of things, right? Kids eat healthier, they do better. Right? That's just a natural thing. This involves having to teach how to cook with vegetables sometimes. And sometimes they teach us how to cook with vegetables. One of the things that's happened with Forgotten Harvest is one week I get there and there's a Muslim lady. And she says, I have something for you. And it was $120 worth of canned goods, non-perishable items. And she said, the neighborhood wanted to do something for the church. And so we collected. And it's just an amazing thing that has happened there. And we've developed some good friendships there. I coach a ball team. And one of the things I make them do is they help me deliver vegetables. No, I don't make them. My ball players, big tough guys, 21-year-olds, have a lot of better things to do. Every one of them loves to do this. None of them go to church, but they love to do this. One time I needed some help. I had a lot of vegetables. I said to the one guy with the cap on the back, I said, I really thank you for coming with me. He goes, I thank you for asking me. A lot of these ball players had no idea people lived like this. They had no idea. This here is hummus that one of the ladies routinely makes for us. And so I've been given homemade spaghetti sauce. I've been given pickles. I've been given hummus. I've been given, you know, all sorts of things. Things I don't really like, but anyways, they do give what they can. We moved our clothing drive into the neighborhoods. We still have a winter one at the church building, and where I met that Al Shamari family. But we moved our clothing drive into the neighborhood. And you'll see Fatima there with my wife Sarah. She comes and works with us at it. She comes and works at the church with the clothing drive, and she came and helped set up there. And every year at Christmas time, we help about 120 families through the schools. The summer one is a little toned down. It's just for the neighborhood, but I mean, there's 120 homes in there, so you can imagine. This is just used clothing that's still good, right? And we get donations from Old Navy, different things like that, that help us. So we've developed nice friendships. They all invite us in for tea, coffee, bananas, and so on. I brought up bananas because there's a story one time that I was visiting a family from Iraq and they brought me a banana. And you got to eat whatever you got to eat, right? You got to eat whatever's set in front of you. So the kids are watching me. And so I started to peel it and they started to giggle. And so I couldn't figure out how else I was supposed to eat the banana. But there's things you learn about culture, right? We joined in a citywide campaign called We Love Windsor. Originally put on by the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada. They go to different cities and they run this citywide campaign. And so what we've done is we go into our neighborhood and we participate, we coordinate with the date. We Love Windsor. And churches all across the city want to do something to tell their neighborhoods, we love you. That we are here for you. That we're on your side. That we want to make this a good place. And we want to be a player in the neighborhood. That we want to be involved. And that's one of the big things. And so what we did, through the help of some very generous people, we organized this We Love Windsor Day. The city, very cooperative. They allowed us to have a school park just down the street, kind of a third place there. Inflatables. You'll notice some of the kids that came along. The University of Windsor basketball team. They came and gave basketball games with the kids that came, and it was kind of neat. And so they were good. This is one of the families that we've gotten to know through our vegetable drive. It was really a good success with some of the church workers working some of the games for the We Love Windsor. We had over 300 people come, and it's quite neat to see all these different people, you know, and hearing them have fun. And the main thing is we're just trying to tell them that we're on your side. We love you. We know you. A couple of things that have happened in the past couple of years. The first picture here, the University of Windsor invited me to participate in a West End Justice is Better Than Charity seminar. And so things are happening that allows us to be a player in the development of our community. By the way, the thing that impressed me the most was what the students at the University of Windsor are doing for the poverty in Windsor. It's a CUP program. If you have a university, I know the University of Ottawa is the leader in this, or Carleton University, one of them. But it's quite impressive to note that when you get out in the community, there's other community groups that you can work with to help the lives of those who are hurting. And when they discover that churches are interested, the respect that they give the churches. The coordinator of this said, we really want churches involved because you churches are on the front line and can get involved in people's lives. And it was quite an interesting thing that there are groups out there that are just hoping that churches will get involved with this. And so Pathway to Potential, CUP program. And then this one here, we've been invited by the United Way to be a part of a 10-year strategy for securing food security in the West End. To make it so that Forgotten Harvest doesn't have to come to Windsor's West End anymore. That when one child is hungry, that's too many children that are hungry. I'm going to close with this. I'm going to bring back the Alshamari family first. They've never celebrated Christmas before, if you can imagine. Shia Muslims probably wouldn't. But they came. And they wrote, it was an honor to celebrate with you the birth of your Christ. And it's not the time to argue whether or not December 25th is the actual birthday or not with the message. Then, this past April, they were asking me what Easter is about. What is this? They didn't know. They had never heard the story before. To be able, for the first time, to tell someone the Christian story of Jesus' death and resurrection, that is a very powerful place to be. And when he couldn't speak very much English, he said, Iraq, now Syria, Canada, good. You know, Canada, good. And I said to him one day, I said, kind of like Psalm 23. He didn't know what Psalm 23 was. And there's been a lot that we've learned. My assumption that Psalm 23 is the most known Bible passage is a little gone. It's the most known Bible passage perhaps in North America. Maybe in Europe, I don't know. I haven't been there too many times. But it's not in Iraq. So I said, do you have an Arabic Bible? Yeah, I have an Arabic Bible. Which also, why would a Shia Muslim have an Arabic Bible, right? It kind of shows You know, there's certain assumptions we just can't make. Well, how do you say David in Arabic? I don't know. How do you say Psalms in Arabic? I don't know. I said Solomon. And he goes, oh, yeah, Solomon. I said, yeah, okay. I said, try to find something that's like Songs of Solomon. And he did. I said, okay, let's go back a little bit. So he found Psalm 23. And I said one line in English, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He'd say the line in Arabic. And you get to verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And he started to cry. And then imagine, you know, I've heard Psalm 23 countless times. But hear that the first time. The power. He's not a Christian. But it is a privilege to be able to speak to him this. And I don't know if I'd ever been able to share with him the power of the resurrection, the power or impact of Psalm 23, if we didn't first ask the question, how am I supposed to love my neighbor? Because as you can see, or as you can guess, our continuing relationship has stopped with me giving him vegetables or me giving him clothes. It's just continued because we're friends. Or as he calls me, his brother. He calls me his brother. I got to ask if I can call him my brother. For sure in the human family right now. On the screen is a little cute girl named Destiny. At our congregational party. And Destiny is a member of a family who we started to give vegetables to. And her dad is Jean Germain from the Congo, who speaks French more than English. She has three older sisters and a younger brother on the way. And Destiny is, as you can tell, she's a really cute kid. And every day, every time she comes to church, she says, look at my dress! And yeah, of course. And her dad has a master's degree, but only in French, and he doesn't know enough English to qualify for the English ticket. University of Guelph, I guess he could have wrote something. It's in agricultural science. So he went back to school. The mom is in school, and recently they just graduated, and now they both have full-time jobs and are being able to move out of the West End, or at least move out of the housing development that they're in. Jean Germain showed up at our clothing giveaway last November, and something dawned on him. He said, is this the same church that gives vegetables? I said, yeah. He said, this is our church. I said, this is our church from now on. And we didn't do it. We didn't feed his children to manipulate them to come to church. That's not what we did. And I wish I could say that our church has grown by hundreds, but that's not what we're doing. But I don't want that little girl to be hungry. That's just it. I don't want her to be hungry. It's too sweet. And so can we love our neighbor? And as the church moves forward, we're not asking the question, how many people have we gotten to come? That's not what we're asking. There are other times to tell the message. There are other areas to teach and preach. But don't tell a deaf man that a blind can see, right? Is the church being the neighbor that loves its neighbors? Is the church welcoming their neighbors? Is the church showing hospitality and accepting their hospitality? Is the church getting into relationship with them where we actually do care about them, not just their numbers on a Sunday roll? What is the witness we have because we are not self-serving as we do this? What is the testimony that people are giving about us? Are we loving? So that's my presentation this morning this afternoon on being a good neighbor. I will open it up if anyone has questions or anything. I have learned some Arabic, by the way. So if you ever meet someone and they give you, yes, she has to, and they give you some Arabic coffee, shukran jazilan. Thank you very much. Or zien, very good. Or al-dubi. I can go on, but anyway, any thoughts or questions? Appreciate that. Liv might answer them if you have any.
In the context of the miracle of feeding into the 5,000.
Right.
I guess I've always seen that, and I'd have to go back and reread every word of the passage to see where I got that impression from. But I always kind of assumed that Jesus was using food to attract them to listen to his message.
Mm. I don't know. I think because it does. I think in Mark 6, in the same passage, and it says about they were sheep scattered by the shepherd. He's moved with compassion. He teaches first, then he feeds. So I'm not against teaching, and I would suggest that without the vegetable delivery, we're probably not going to get a chance to teach anybody. But the motive in feeding is because they're hungry, not that we're going to convert somebody. Churches for too long have the reputation that they're in it for themselves. That we're doing this to snag you. That's the reputation we don't want. That I think to develop a discipleship relationship, they got to know we care about them. Not that we care that only about them if they come to church. I think that's the message we're trying to get across.
Jesus was putting first and forward the spiritual first.
Sure.
And then he looked after the physical.
Sure.
Came second.
Sure.
He had compassion on them because they had followed him for quite a while.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And you're right.
All right, Drew, I got lots of thoughts, but it's good. This all points to the French evangelism stuff. You build friends, and those things will happen. And we live, our congregation is in a real low-income area as well, although ours we find is a lot of turnover.
Mm-hmm. Same with ours.
Students and new immigrants, and they'll get jobs and move out, right? So it's very transient in that way. But when you build those relationships, we only have so many hours in a day. And so there's a real fine line of how long do you keep those relationships going when there's so many others that you could be building. And,
yeah.
I'm convinced if everybody took on one family and over a period of years or a friend or something, we'd be multiplying.
Yeah.
It would be great. But, usually it's two or three that are taking the time to build those.
Right.
At some point, because there's like a lineup of others, you have to almost drop one. Another. That's kind of what I found is difficult. Is
yeah.
You know that, or there's lots of.
So my question would be like, that's a good point, and I would suggest, I got some thoughts about that. I don't think we should drop someone we care about.
Mm-hmm.
If the goal is conversions only, then we're going to drop them, because the answer is going to be they're not going to be converted, so we're going to drop them. I haven't dropped childhood friends, even though I haven't converted them. Why do I keep them on? Because they're my friends, right? I don't drop family members who aren't Christians, right? But it's been, some of them have been preached to for 60 years. They haven't converted, but I still keep the relationship. So this is my difficulty with that is if my goal is conversion only, then okay. But if my goal is to love this person, is it loving that if they don't convert, I say, I got to go on. Is that loving them?
I think maybe John 6, 25-26 has something to say to that. In a way, when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? And Jesus answered, truly, truly, I say, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus didn't drop those people. Now, some of them turned around and left at that point.
Sure.
Though somebody doesn't convert, if they will let us be who we are, if they will let us say
right.
what we believe.
That's right. That's right.
Now, if they won't, then they will leave.
That's right. That's right. And that's like that Iraqi family has allowed me to share with them stories. I haven't pushed, and it's not the reason why I'm their friend. But it is who I am. So, and they're allowed to tell me who they are, too.
Drop's a bad word. I wasn't implying.
Oh, you were.
Them,
yeah, you were.
Everybody knew them. But at some point, like for Christmas, you're not necessarily going to, unless you open up and bring more and more people in, you know.
That's right.
None of us could maintain that. So, and same with my cousins and stuff. Yeah, I used to be with them 3 or 4 days a week. And
right.
And older, and there's, you know, now it's once every 2 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Drop them, but
that's right.
At some point, they
yep.
offer. You know, that
yep.
that's, I guess, change.
And that happens with every relationship we have, right? I mean, Jesus did only have 12 disciples.
Right. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that happened. We don't see, when we first met them and they were in need, we were there every day. But we can't keep that up. And they know that though too, right? So now it's, but we're not going to drop them.
They know you're there for them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's how, like, there are those that we've connected with, like Sarah and I personally, John Germain, you know. And then there's others that the relationship is more this way. That we see them every week when we deliver vegetables. If they have concerns, they can call us, but we haven't become best of friends with them either. You know, they're just so. But that's natural in every walk of life. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, I would just, do you provide anything at all, like when you're handing out vegetables, do you put a tract or an invitation or something like that in it at all?
Okay, what we do when we first meet them is we explain the whole program. It's West Side Church of Christ, and we have a little thing about how we care about this neighborhood, and we do, and then it's with Forgotten Harvest as well, and we put in there services we provide. Then we don't with the vegetables, but say I have something. Every now and then I'll go and talk to them door to door. Sometimes I'll say, like, just want to know if there's anything we can pray for you this week, you know. So there is things like that. We don't leave it, but with the vegetables, we kind of the one-time introduction, and then we leave it as these are coming to you, whether you come to us or not. You're hungry; these are coming to you, you know. And so we don't want it to be that these vegetables are tied to how much response we get from you. But on the other hand, we do. It's not like we don't try to build more relationships with them, because we do that. So,
my reason for asking is that this is the most wonderful thing I've ever heard in terms of outreach.
Thank
really
you.
Seriously, I've been around a while. The one thing that scares me, I would hate to meet someone on the Day of Judgment and they said, "You brought me vegetables."
Yeah.
You never mentioned him to me.
Right. That's true. And that's been brought up. My response to that was, we weren't mentioning anything before we brought the vegetables. When we did our delivery, you know, the church has been there since 1972. Some of them had lived there 20 years, and they couldn't even tell you what the church was. So there is a sense, you're right. I mean, there still is, we're still giving the preaching the kingdom of God. We're still giving the message. But I would suggest that we've probably given more messages now that we've done the vegetables every week than we had previous. Yeah, like I think in previous door knocking campaigns, you do a door knocking campaign once a year, once every 6 months. That's once that you have contact with them, and then it's to sell a product. Whereas this is, we're providing a friendship. So, go ahead.
I teach people, I sell franchises, okay, and I started the franchise. And when I train people about conducting yourself in business, if you want to be successful, do not put your main goal in acquiring money.
Mm.
Okay, that's what you're in business for.
Right, absolutely.
But the main goal is
right.
to help the person
right.
that you're in their home,
mm-hmm.
fixed basement. So I say you tell them what they need, and how much it's going to be, and be on their side, and be truthful and honest.
Mm-hmm.
If you do
sure.
things in their best interest, the money will always follow, so you're getting what you need, but you're not out there trying to gouge somebody, you won't last very long.
Right.
Right? So when you go out there and show love, it doesn't matter how it is, what you're doing is really promoting love.
That's right.
And things fall into place.
That's right.
But love first.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Sort of goes to that statement about what kind of love.
Right. What kind of love am I going to love them with?
An empty contact.
Strings attached. Some people think.
Yeah, well, they do.
Or is it a real connection? And
yeah.
People that you care for and,
yeah.
and share with.
And I will, yeah, and I will say, with the Middle Eastern people especially, now, our exposure to them has grown tremendously. I mean, and really it's our daughters who taught us not to be afraid of them as much. Our daughter's school is roughly 35% Muslim, all of them. And they've taught us that a lot of them are friendly. Don't be scared of them. But anyways, you have them in your home, and it's the greatest honor that you've done for them. And they're so, you know, they don't worry about getting their house clean. If you show up, come on in, and they're going to give you something to eat. You invite them into your home, and that's a, so if you're ever running across Middle Eastern people, hospitality, I think Jesus knew a lot when he talked about hospitality, and it really is a major icebreaker with people. Go ahead.
Also, too, there was a guy that was doing miracles in Jesus' name, but he wasn't one of them. And Jesus said, leave him alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do good to them long enough, that there's no way that they can say anything bad.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're doing, if you do good, there's nothing that they can say bad about the church.
Right.
You see, and God does the adding, not man. Mm-hmm. And when people disperse, like you were talking about, they could be going and saying good things.
Right.
You don't know. God has control on these things. We don't know the future.
Sure.
He does.
That's true.
Through faith, when you're doing things like this, it could be wonderful things. You don't even know what's happening.
That's true.
That Brent was just saying a minute ago, like when you take the strings off, you don't even know how many good testimonies you've already given.
Right.
You know, that's another multiplication blessing, is when you find out years later that you had a faithful testimony and you never realized that anyone was watching what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say something similar, because I had a guy in, when I was painting the cabinets, and he decided to fix a light for me, and he says, I'll do this good deed, maybe I'll be with the good today, maybe I'll go to heaven. And so that, so we started talking. And obviously, you know, perfect stranger, he's in your house, you know, for a few hours, you're not going to convert him.
Right.
So how much can you, so how
right.
much can you do? So it's like, you know, somebody plants a seed, somebody... Mm-hmm. Orders and guides the entrance. Let your light so shine that men may see your good works and glory. But God didn't say, let your light so shine so men will become a member of the church.
Right.
So, you know, so I just have a good feeling about it. I think the seed was planted, and somewhere down the road,
right.
you know, good things will happen. But we don't have to see the whole thing
right.
to fruition.
Right. You know. That's true. That's right. All right, I appreciate that.